Chapter 8. I laid out the bones of our plan to Scourge for infiltrating the retreat and finding the evidence we needed to prove Ursinger had broken the treaty with the other Night Elf tribes by making a pact with a demon lord. The recent attacks in the gloom by creatures from the Twilight region had to be connected to the Yeni chief, and I'd found a pin in one of those creatures that the chief of the Dolrath Night Elves said looked like the symbols used by the demon lords from the deeper dark. The Zinkari man listened without interruption, and his dark eyes were intense as I gave him the details I knew. The only thing I left out was that Ibsith had told me where the retreat was. I tried to use my elven wife's name as little as possible while in the gloom, even though Scourge and many others knew I'd taken her somewhere safe, away from her creepy half-brother.
"It's a good start,"
the dark-skinned man said as he pushed his lips together and nodded with an impressed expression.
"And I am more than happy to help. But there is one slight problem."
"Oh?"
Emrila replied with a raised eyebrow as she sipped her drink.
"That sounds like you want something."
"Don't we all?"
Scourge held out his hands in an innocent gesture.
"And it's such a small thing. With the two of you helping me, it would be cleared up in no time."
"What do you want?" I asked as I took a drink from the amber-colored beverage Grok had brought me. The alcohol was sweet and slightly fruity, almost like a mead I'd had once. But I'd never seen any bees in the gloom, so I tried not to think about whatever weird and potentially gross ingredients were in it. It tasted good, but because it was so sweet, I didn't think this was something I would want to drink often.
"You heard me speaking with Durgan,"
the Zinkari man started to explain.
"I'm helping him get a shipment of raw ore for a very reasonable price. The trouble is, the people who have the goods are demanding full payment before they will deliver the ore, and Durgan will not pay until he sees the ore exists, and I am caught in the middle."
Scourge was good at playing the innocent bystander, but I knew the man was a thief and a spy, so I assumed there was more to the story than he was telling us.
"And what exactly do you want us to do?"
the horned woman asked as she skeptically cocked her head to one side.
"Just go to the bandits' caverns with me,"
Scourge said as if it were nothing more than running to the store for some eggs.
"All you have to do is stand around and look tough while I sort this matter out."
"So be your bodyguards?" I asked as I narrowed my eyes at the dark-skinned man.
"You do have a certain reputation in these parts,"
Scourge noted, and he pointedly looked down at the Galil.
"And with you by my side, I think the bandits would be more open to negotiations."
"What do you think, partner?"
Emrila asked as she looked at me with a skeptical glint in her black eyes. "Okay," I said after a moment of consideration. "We'll help you out, and you'll help us out. That seems fair to me."
"Excellent."
The Zinkari man grinned and clapped his hands together.
"There's no time like the present."
The half-demon man downed the rest of his drink, gathered up his things, and then looked at Amrila and I with an expectant expression. Amrila also downed the last of her drink, so I took one last sip of mine, but I didn't want to cloud my judgment or take a huge mouthful of the very sweet drink. Then the three of us headed out of the tavern, but as we walked through Bermshire, the three of us were still cautious and stuck to the side roads and alleys. It wasn't unheard of for Ursinger's soldiers to patrol this part of the caverns. I was confident we'd be able to handle any soldiers we came across, but I didn't see the need to commit acts of mass carnage if it could be avoided. I wasn't afraid to fight whoever I had to, but I also wasn't especially bloodthirsty. As Amrila and I followed Scourge out of the farmlands around Bermshire, he kept just a little ahead of us, and naturally fell into the role of scout. The path we took was a little roundabout, but I kinda liked that. I was starting to learn more and more of the back ways through the gloom, which was very useful. "How'd you meet Scourge?" I asked Amrila as we picked our way through a field near the edge of the farmland.
"When I was just a girl,"
the red-skinned woman said as she stepped over a row of what looked like red cabbages.
"Finding my way in the gloom, a mutual acquaintance set us up on a job together. Scourge is one of the first thieves who taught me the tricks of the trade."
"Set you up?" I repeated. "Like on a date?"
"Oh, gods, no."
Amrila shook her head and laughed.
"Purely professional. And I guess we're friends now. but honestly, I have never known the man to show that kind of interest in anyone.
No one? I asked with a raised eyebrow. Like, not women or men? Because he kind of gives off the vibe he likes, dudes.
If he does, then he must be very discreet.
Amrila shrugged.
I've known him for years, and he has never mentioned a lover. And thieves are a notoriously gossipy lot, so I think I would have heard a rumour at some point if he'd slept with anyone of note. But he seems content to gather secrets, broker deals, and fret over his appearance.
Huh. I looked over at the back of the very well-groomed Zinkari man. I guess good for him for knowing what he likes. I'd been to the Bandits' Caverns before, and of all the caves and caverns in the Yeni territory, this place was the most treacherous. Chasms and fissures scarred the uneven ground, and one never knew when they would come across unsavory or dangerous thieves and bandits. The first time I'd come here, I'd fought a group of orcs who were roasting a flayed gnome over their campfire, and it was all sorts of gross. But Scourge was a very competent guide, and was able to find the safest routes for us. Before long, I could smell a campfire, and the low sounds of voices echoed through the cave around us. We're nearly at their camp. Scourge stopped and looked at the horned woman and me. It would be best if you let me do most of the talking. Ulim can be a bit of a hothead, and this will go quicker if we can avoid upsetting him.
It would have been nice of you to mention that before we came along.
Amrila said in a dry tone. If I had, you might not have come. The Zinkari man shrugged. We'll follow your lead for now. I assured the dark-skinned man. But if I don't like where things are going, I'm going to take over. I'm not trying to get jumped by a bunch of bandits today.
Neither am I, Scourge agreed. That is precisely why I brought you.
Then the charcoal-skinned Zinkari turned and moved confidently toward a narrow ledge that led past a massive gap with a speed and grace born from having lived his whole life in this underground world. I looked at Amrila, who shrugged and also started toward the ledge to follow Scourge, and then I brought up the rear. The ledge had a jagged edge that fell off into the chasm next to it, and was only about 2 feet wide, so I hugged the wall as I followed the two light-footed Zinkari, since I was not nearly as comfortable with the dangerous path as they were. As I walked along, I did look once into the gaping hole next to me, and saw rocky ground about 200 feet below. I could also see the edge of a stream or river below, but I quickly lifted my eyes, focused on the path of the ledge, and focused my vision about 2 feet in front of me. The ledge led up, as well as forward, at a slight incline, and once we reached the top, we were on a small plateau high up in the cavern. I could see some tents up ahead, and several orcs were milling around. Scourge continued confidently forward, so Amrila and I followed just a few steps behind him. But I kept my hand on the Galil as we approached the bandit camp. I also put my Pro X's on, just in case things took a turn, and Amrila saw me put on the ear protection and followed suit without asking any questions. Scourge, you might want to take a couple of these, I said as I handed the dark-skinned man a pair of silicon earplugs.
What on earth are these?
The Zinkari man asked as he poked at the brightly colored silicon with one finger. They're for your ears. I replied, if I need to start shooting, you'll want to put one in each ear. You'll thank me later.
I've heard your weapon is loud.
Scourge replied as he playfully continued to squish an earplug in his fingers.
Clever of you to come up with a way to protect your hearing.
Just make sure you put them in quickly,
Amrila added,
or your ears will be ringing for hours after.
The bandit camp had a kind of semi-permanent feeling to it. Nothing as nice as the Dolrath's encampment, but their tents had clearly been in the same place for a long time and were anchored into the ground. There were 6 tents arranged in a half moon around the large fire pit in the center. But luckily, there wasn't a small gnome turning on a spit over this one. Stones were placed around the fire pit to keep the burning wood in the center, and big, flat rocks served as seats all around the pit. I noticed there was also an empty wooden holding pen between two of the tents, but I didn't want to know what its purpose was. As the three of us came up to the campsite, 2 burly orcs with spears stepped forward to bar our progress. One had a shaved head and an ugly necklace made of tusks. But I wasn't sure if those tusks had come from the wild hogs that lived in the gloom growth, or if they were trophies from other orcs. It probably would have been rude to ask. The other orc had a short, black goatee that was carefully curled at the end, which was interesting. While Grok, the orc tavern keeper, was well-groomed, I'd never seen an orc who'd made such a strong aesthetic choice. Most of them just seemed to go for whatever made them look tough and intimidating. But not this guy. Props to him, I guess.
I'm here to speak with Ulam,
Scourge told the two orc guards in a voice that dripped with honey.
And you brought friends this time?
The orc with the manicured goatee replied in a booming voice.
They're not his friends.
A gravelly voice said from the direction of the fire. I looked over and saw a huge orcish man, the biggest one I'd ever seen yet, sitting by the fire as he tended the flames. The orc's long, braided red hair had beaten silver bands woven into it, and his bushy beard bore white streaks in it, which showed the man's advanced age. The leather armor he wore was a rich brown color, and the metal studs were riveted to it for an extra layer of protection.
These two are meant to be a veiled threat from our Zinkari friend.
The big-ass orc continued as he stood and looked around at the three of us.
Why else would you bring the vampire of the gloom and his famous booming bolt thrower?
This orc was clearly the leader of this group of bandits. His armor was the finest of any of the dozen or so orcs I could see around the camp, and his dark green arms were covered in extensive, elaborate tattoos. The bandit leader's prominent tusks were also capped with silver and had tribal designs etched into the metal. So this must be the Ulam that Scourge had mentioned. I assumed Ulam called me a vampire because Ursinger had circulated leaflets that claimed I was a vampire from the Twilight region who'd kidnapped his half-sister, Ibsith, and the creepy bastard had offered a hefty bounty for bringing me in alive. It was the bounty that worried me the most. Gold made people do stupid things, like attack a man with a loaded galil when all you were armed with were spears and swords.
Now, Ulam, Scourge said in a drawling tone. There's no need to be hurtful. I can be friends with a vampire if I wish.
Did you bring the rest of my money, half-breed?
Ulam spat as he gestured for the two guards to let us through with a wave of his huge hand. The Zinkari man ignored the insult and pushed past the two orcs with the spears. As Amreel and I went to follow, the orc with the ringlet for a goatee winked at the horned woman, who then stopped and placed her hands on the hilts of her swords.
Wink at me again,
the red-skinned woman said in a voice dripping with venom.
And I will pluck out your eye and serve it to my husband on a golden plate.
Just so you know, I added pleasantly, I would eat it, but only because my wife made it for me. Nothing personal, I hope you understand. Curlybeard opened his mouth to say something, but he was cut off when Ulam irritably cleared his throat as he waited for us by the fire. Amreel and I moved over to the fire where Ulam and Scourge were standing. I wasn't sure how to interpret the fact that Ulam didn't offer us a seat by the fire pit, but I was just as happy to stand. Something deep inside me was sounding a warning bell, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I tried to look calm on the outside, but inside I was keeping track of where each of the orc bandits I could see were, what they were armed with, and guessing how many more could potentially be hidden away in the tents.
Do you have the rest of the money or not, Scourge?
Ulam rumbled loudly. The big orc seemed even bigger up close. I was tall for a human, which meant I was taller than most of the people of the gloom, but Ulam was the only person I'd met down here that I had to look up at. The bandit leader had squared his shoulders, and I realized why he hadn't asked us to sit. The big-ass orc was putting on a show for his men, and he wanted to be sure they could all see us.
That was not the deal, the Zinkari man said in a cool tone. I gave you half the gold up front, and you were supposed to deliver the ore and get the second half.
I've run into supply issues,
Ulam replied with a leering smile.
The Yenny army has been buying up all the ore. If you want your shipment, I'll need the rest of the gold to grease the wheels of commerce.
The wheels of commerce?
The dark-skinned man snorted.
That's an awfully fancy term for you, Ulam. Did you spend all your gold to get it?
Ulam balled up his fists and took a step toward the slinky Zinkari man, but I stepped forward to put myself between them. I could tell just from the look in the big orc's eyes he was spoiling for a fight. I'd seen that same look in the eyes of schoolyard bullies, or the guy who spends the whole night speaking too loudly in the bar. A fight was about to happen, but the question was who would throw the first punch.
I'm not afraid of you, vampire.
The silver-tusked bandit growled. I didn't expect you to be, I said with a disarming smile. Being afraid requires imagination, and I'm guessing that's not your strong suit. What I would like is for you to deal straight with my friend here. Either you have the ore ready to deliver, or you're just jerking us around and trying to get paid without having done any work.
Are you calling me a liar?
Ulam's voice had a dangerous note to it. Of course not, I replied, with a hand near my galil. I'm asking you if you're a liar. Ulam's eyes narrowed ever so slightly, and I knew that next he would throw a haymaker. As if on cue, just as I started to duck down, the big-ass orc raised his arm and started to bring it around. The orc's arm flew over my head, and I could feel the air of it passing as I took the butt of my rifle and jammed it into the bandit leader's stomach. Ulam doubled over with an explosive exhale of breath as the shouting started. I immediately backed away, clicked on the laser on the rail of the galil, and held it at the ready. Next to me, Amrila drew her swords and put her back against mine to watch the bandits behind us. Meanwhile, Scourge stood there, looking unimpressed with Ulam's antics, and glanced around at the other orcs standing outside of the circle of the fire pit.
It's not too late to talk about this,
the Zinkari man said in a casual tone as he carefully worked a silicon plug into each of his ears.
Rush them!
Ulam shouted in a commanding voice, and then he dove out of the circle of the fire pit. I started to turn to train the beam of my laser and flashlight on the bandit leader, but a movement out of the corner of my eye caught my attention.
Three big ones coming in!
I shouted as the orc with the shaved head raised his spear in preparation to launch it at me, and he was flanked by two other squat and burly orcs.
Four coming from behind!
Amrila shouted in response. I flipped off the safety on the galil with my heart starting to pound in my chest, and I wondered again just how many orcs were in the camp. Then I put the red dot of my laser on the spear guy's chest and fired around, and the orc reeled back as a bright, bloody red hole exploded in his chest as my bullet ripped through him. The shock of the rifle blast made the other two orcs pause and grab their ears, so I squeezed the trigger two more times, and both of the orc bandits in front of me fell backwards to the ground. My adrenaline was pumping hard as I looked around for the next target coming at me, but I was still able to be impressed with how fucking sweet my new laser and flashlight combo was. As I turned to look at Amrila, I could see one orc already dead at her feet as she and Scourge worked on the other three. Scourge wielded a long, curved dagger, and I watched as he used the cruel-looking blade to swipe at the trunk of a bandit, which caused the orc's guts to spill out of the wound in slick, purplish ropes. I quickly turned back around as two orcs ran out of the tents in front of me with swords at the ready. As I trained the dot of my laser on one, I could see a knot of bandits behind him looking shocked and uncertain, so it seemed like there were some bandits who valued their lives over their loyalty to Ulam. I aimed the laser at the head of the first orc that came out of the tents and fired, and my Pro-X's cut the sound out of the world around me briefly. The orc's head snapped back as the bullet entered his eye and came out the back of his head with a gruesome red spray. Then I turned slightly right and found the next bandit as he rushed forward, with his ugly green face contorted in a war cry. I put the dot of the laser right over his heart and squeezed my trigger again. The Pro-X's silenced the report once more, and I watched as the orc's chest blew open before he crumpled to the ground. Then I caught sight of Curlybeard. He was just on the other side of the tent and running away from the camp. And just ahead of him, I spotted Ulam's retreating back. Fuck. The bandit leader and some of his men were running away.
The big guy's making a run for it!
I shouted to Amrila. I quickly turned and saw the two Zinkaris cutting their way through two more orcs. But there were also three others dead on the ground at Amrila and Scourge's feet.
Go after him!
The horned woman yelled with a fierce grin as she ran one of her swords through the bandit in front of her.
We'll be right behind you, partner.
Amrila kicked Scourge in the shin to get his attention, since his ears were plugged and probably still ringing slightly from the blast of the rifle. The Zinkari man spun, slashed the neck of the bandit he was fighting, and turned to look at the red-skinned woman with an expression of curiosity. Amrila jerked her head to one side to signal for the dark-skinned man to follow, so I turned and ran through the camp, and the frightened orc bandits melted out of my way as I chased down their cowardly leader. As I passed the edge of the tent circle, I caught sight of Curlybeard and Ulam, but they were quite a ways ahead of me. But that didn't matter with my galil ace. I shouldered the rifle and looked through the red dot sight. Just as I sighted the two running orcs, though,
I watched as Curly Beard jumped and tackled Ulam. The smaller bandit was able to bring the bigger orc to the ground, and an ugly fight ensued there on the cave floor. I lowered my galil as Amrila and Scourge came up beside me, and they too stopped to watch the orcs as they wrestled, kicked, and punched. Then Curly Beard pulled out a dagger from his boot and jammed it into the soft space just under Ulam's jutting chin. Oh, shit! I snorted as I watched the bandit leader's body stiffen and go limp. Curly Beard stood and looked over at the three of us, and then he immediately dropped his knife and put his hands in the air.
We surrender!
Curly Beard shouted, and his shaking voice echoed through the cavern.
Just give us your terms. We'll give you the ore, some fine leather, whatever you want. I don't want to die just because Ulam was an ass.
Well,
Scourge said a little too loudly as he pulled the silicon plugs out of his ears.
That was a refreshing little fight.
All right!
I grinned as I shouted over to Curly Beard, while still holding the galil in my hands.
Come on over slowly, and we'll try this again.
There were 7 orc bandits left in the camp, and they all gathered around the fire pit with Amrila, Scourge, and I to negotiate the terms of me not killing them. What's your name? I asked Curly Beard in a friendly tone that let the manicured man know I wasn't holding a grudge.
Euro.
The dark-haired orc replied as he sat down across from me by the fire. Nice to meet you, Euro. I inclined my head to the man. Scourge, this is Euro. I'm pretty sure he's in charge here now.
Excellent.
The Zhenkari man smiled slyly.
Now, about my shipment.
It's sitting in a dead drop just west of here.
Euro blurted out before the dark-skinned man could finish.
We'll deliver it to the agreed location tonight. No further charge.
The well-kempt orc said the last part as he glanced sideways at me, and I glanced over at Scourge to see if he was satisfied with the new arrangement.
I feel that we'll be fast friends, Euro.
The Zhenkari man nodded his head.
I'll be checking up on you soon, just to make sure you've kept your promises.
Scourge patted the goateed orc on the shoulder and then stood up.
If you'll excuse us,
the dark-skinned man continued as he politely bowed.
We have pressing business elsewhere.
Amrila and I stood and followed Scourge as he sauntered out of the bandits' camp, and I looked back several times to make sure none of them got any clever ideas and followed us.
We'll take the tunnels near Bermshire down into the Dolruth territory,
the horned woman said once we were out of earshot of the orcs' camp.
It's been quite some time since I've been to the lands of the Dolrath,
Scourge said in a whimsical tone.
There used to be a lovely hot spring not far from the entrance into the Twilight region. We'll tell Durgan the good news about his ore later. It's not as if it will spoil.
I was excited to go back to the encampment. I wanted to see the look on Nyla May's face when I gave her a couple of boxes of ammo and the spare pair of Pro X's I'd bought for her. Being married to Ibsith and Amrila was mind-blowing, and I couldn't have been happier. But I had to admit, there was something about the Dolrath princess that I found very appealing, and it seemed as if she might have the same feelings for me.